You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Okay, time for MLB.com Extras National League Central Edition, where we examine the Brewers and Matt Garza's relationship, Jay Bruce making history in Cincinnati, and how is the schedule going to affect things as the Cubs, Cardinals, and Pirates battle it out down the stretch. That and more, MLB.com Extras National League Central Edition. Jennifer, look, it's Tuesday we're talking here. This team has lost four of their last five games. Is there panic yet in St. Louis?
There is definitely panic in the city. You know, it's actually similar to kind of what we saw after the Cardinals lost two games with San Diego a few weeks ago, got pummeled, and then, as we know, go on to win 7 out of 8. So, yeah, I mean, fans' expectations here are obviously very high, and I think, you know, as good as the starting pitching has been to see other teams come in and score as many runs as the Pirates and the Cubs and even the Nationals last week did, I think it gives a little reason for pause. But big picture, this Cardinals team is still in first place by a pretty healthy margin. Best record in baseball. It is just odd to see them lose 4 out of 5 at any point, but certainly to see them lose 4 out of 5 at home where they've been so good this year.
Yeah, so the runs allowed, though, I mean, you lose some games, that happens. And I know Matheny's, keeping that stoic, exterior. He's doing a good job with that, as he always does. But if there is concern, it's not so much the losses as much as it's got to be the pitching.
Yeah, I mean, it's been, we're used to, obviously this is a team that has lost plenty of games along the way, but most of the games that they have lost to this point have been very low-scoring, close games, and that's not what we've seen in the last week. I mean, you think back even to the first two games against the Nationals to start this homestand, Cardinals got down in both of those games pretty big early, allowed 5 runs in both of those wins, ended up winning both games 8-5, so it kind of overshadowed some of the pitching issues. But then you look at the last 5 days, they've been outscored 30-11. The last 8 games, they've allowed at least 5 runs in 6 of those. And that's just very different. I mean, this is a team that through its first 129 games allowed 5 or more runs just 33 times. So it does look a little bit different. Both the starting pitching and the bullpen has been rocked a little bit at this point. And you know, I think there are some growing concerns about where Carlos Martinez is. Is the workload catching up to him? Lance Lynn didn't look good in his start on Monday. He's had a little bit of a rocky month here and there. And now Michael Wacha, people are curious as to how he's going to do on extra rest. So it does. It just looks different. And I think that's the reason that it's been a little bit jarring for as many people as it has been.
Well, I feel like this is a relatively new phenomenon. You know, let's call it the last 10 years where teams down the stretch, in a race, and we start, growing concerned with pitch limits, where I feel like in years, decades earlier, it was, hey, look, who cares, right? You blow it out. We're gonna win this thing. But you mentioned Martinez and Wacha, and there's a plan, it seems, to sort of stretch these guys out a little bit and try and minimize the innings some. Do they get at all concerned about, as you just mentioned, what the rhythms, whatever else it is that take a back seat when you start minimizing innings? Are they concerned at all about that part of it?
I mean, I think that's a legitimate question. I mean, you listen to Lance Lynn's comments on Monday, and he's not part of this group that's, being the innings being conserved in the same way that it's for Martinez and Walker. But his start was pushed back an extra 3 days, largely because of the ankle issue he had and just the Cardinals had the flexibility. And he talked after his start, which lasted only 2 1/3 innings, about how tough it was for him to get out of a routine. We know that starting pitchers are creatures of habit. They have a routine that they go through in the 4 days leading up to a start. And for both Lance Lynn, Michael Wacha, he left the ballpark last Tuesday thinking he was pitching Wednesday against the Nationals. It wasn't until he got a midnight phone call from his manager that, no, you're not going Wednesday. We're going to push you back to the following Tuesday. So how that affects their schedule, yeah, I think that's a very real thing. Now, the Cardinals certainly have the luxury of having the lead that they do in the NL Central and being able to build in this rest, I think, a little bit easier than maybe other clubs who are really having to try to make a hard push either to get in the playoffs or leapfrog a team in front of the Cardinals aren't necessarily in that position. But, yeah, I mean, these guys are used to pitching every 5 days, and for some of them it is very hard to pull back from that schedule. In the long run, though, this was something that was planned all along for both Carlos and Michael Wacha. I wouldn't be surprised if we see Martinez at some point this month either have another start skip or at least have it delayed a little bit. With Michael Wacha, they feel like they can push him a little bit further because you think back 2 years ago, he pitched almost 180 innings. Last year it dipped off because of the shoulder issue, but he has been to this point before, so he can be pushed probably a little bit further than Carlos.
You know, this Cardinals team just got done with the Pirates, dropped 2 of 3 at home, now dealing with the Chicago Cubs, and there's still road series left, you know, at Chicago on that next very long road trip. They've got to go to Pittsburgh on the final roadie of the year. You know, as you watch these teams, as we see them make their play in this final month of the season, does one or the other stand out to you, frighten you more if you were a Cardinals fan?
Well, I mean, I would say that to this point, like, both teams have come into St. Louis this past week and really made a statement. You look at the Cubs, they were 1-6 at Busch Stadium leading into Monday. Then they go out and pummel the Cardinals 9-0. The Pirates had their problems at Busch Stadium. They come here and win a series, their first road series against an NL Central team all year. So they both show that they're going to be tough competitors. I think, you know, looking at it, I think the Pirates are still going to be the tougher team for the Cardinals in October. Their pitching, their starting pitching has had a way of really keeping the Cardinals offense at bay. I mean, we've seen the success that Gerrit Cole has had. Francisco Liriano is a guy who has really puzzled the Cardinals. Jay Happ came in here last week and dominated. And then if they get A.J. Burnett back, I just think their starting pitching is a little bit deeper and can challenge the Cardinals a little bit better than the Cubs as well. Now, certainly the Cubs have had their issues with Jake Arrieta, as have most teams, but they have had very good success against John Lester. I don't think he scares them. And then after that, the Cubs starting pitching really dips to that point. Now, the benefit, of course, to the Cardinals is if they're able to hang on and win the NL Central, they can watch Gerrit Cole and Jake Arrieta go at it in the wild card game, and then it sets up that they'd only have to face the winner of that pitcher one time. So that's certainly going to be to their benefit if they can hold off and win the division.
Tom, let's talk about the schedule for a second. I get it. This is one of the perils, I guess, of being an exciting team that in a race. You get the big spotlight games. And so the Pirates and Cardinals got the big Sunday night game, only then to have to turn around and this happens and make that really difficult, you know, very short turnaround on the road then the following day. Those are tough little scheduling quirks.
Well, yes, they are. And, you know, this was a unique situation because that last Sunday night game was followed by the Labor Day game. So it was an afternoon game in Cincinnati, which isn't a terrible distance away from St. Louis, but still, they had to go back in the field 13 hours after leaving the field in a different time zone. But like you said, that's the perk or one of the handicaps of being a good team. You have to put up with some scheduling changes that, you know, aren't necessarily in your favor.
And I know the key is you just try to stay stay positive, right? If you're Clint Hurdle, you don't gripe about it, right? Because you don't want to give people that excuse, that route. But what was the tenor in the clubhouse among players? Surely there had to be. I know ball players, and occasionally they'll gripe. You get anything on that?
Well, just the fact that with that game in St. Louis, they improved their record at Sunday night this season to 4-0. Even the four appearances, in the past, I think they went 13, 14 years without ever making an appearance to Sunday Night Baseball. So they kind of enjoy the recognition that the fact that, they're playing the kind of ball that people want to see. But by the same token, basically everybody was in a hurry to get out of St. Louis. The earlier you left, the more sleep you could get. You know, we're talking the difference of getting maybe 5 hours sleep or 5.5. So, they were just in a hurry to leave and go to the next stop, and then nobody really complained about possible, next day fatigue. I mean, that wasn't a concern at all. That was just, everything was kind of speeded up.
Yeah. I always feel like the teams play better that very next day, almost unconscious, literally.
Well, they say that, those tough days really, the effect is that the second day, not the day immediately following it, but it's the second day. So the second game in Cincinnati, even though it's a night game, if there's any residue from the quick turnaround, it's more likely to show up on the second day, not the one immediately afterwards.
Yeah. Of course, all this time, we're coming off the series against the St. Louis Cardinals, a series win. which is huge. We've talked, it seems, a lot lately about the head-to-head opportunities against the Cardinals. And, you know, if they're going to get it done in this division, they've got a chance to do it, you know, of their own volition. But they got swept by the Brewers going into that series, which is just, I mean, that's almost more aggravating than struggling against the top team.
Well, absolutely. You know, the Milwaukee, you know, they also ran, got into it a little bit with Hurdle about that. Because he always makes it a point, it doesn't matter who we're playing. You know, it's not just because it's St. Louis, it doesn't mean we're going to play with any more energy or want to win more. But he conceded the other side of that coin. When you do come up against a team that's out of contention, they do play with more energy against teams in contention. So even if you maintain your level of competitiveness, you're still going up against teams that want to beat you more. And so that the playing field does tilt a little bit in favor of teams that are playing, you know, the players are playing for jobs. There's no pressure on them. It's really a nothing to lose attitude. And then, you know, we see that against Milwaukee. We're seeing it right now in a series in Cincinnati. And I think that's just another way of saying that, you know, you do not, you know, you do play up your, you know, your competition in the sense that, you know, when you play to St. Louis, both teams bring the same energy. When you're playing with a team that's out of contention, you know, they want to do nothing more than knock you off.
That's it. I can't take it anymore. We're past a week into September. I am on board. Move over. There needs to be a little more room on this bandwagon. I'm caught up in the euphoria of these Cubs. Am I going to be let down? Or is there really something to the end of this story?
No, I think there's something to this, and I think you're a little late on the bandwagon, too, if it's, you're just jumping on now. So I think most of the fans have jumped on quite much earlier than that. I think the biggest, and I know it's only one game for their win on Labor Day over the Cardinals, but and I know that the Cardinals were coming off a Sunday night game, and they were a little tired. And I know it was hot, but when you look at the difference between this team at the end of June when they played in St. Louis and they were outscored 15-5 in three games, all losses to the Cardinals, and then they come back on Monday, Labor Day, and they, in essence, romp 9-0 against, you know, against Lance Lynn, who is not a minor league call-up, who's a decent pitcher. I mean, that certainly helps the Cubs' confidence, and it's, you know, as Joe Madden said, you know, he really wanted them to believe they could win here. They came into Monday's game 1-6 in St. Louis, you know, and that's not a very confidence building record against the Cardinals. Mm-hmm. Now they're, you know, with that win on Labor Day, they're only 2-6, but still, that really helps in terms of the young players.
Yeah, with two games left in that series in St. Louis. And then at the conclusion of what really is a long road trip, they'll come home and get St. Louis again. Now, you can't forget about Pittsburgh in there. And
right. You know, this is a tough trip. Yeah, this is their longest trip of the year. This is, you know, the Phillies kicked their butts at Wrigley, and the Cubs are not going to forget that, and I think that they would like some payback for that. That was in the end of July when the Cubs lost three straight to the Phillies, and at that point the Phillies were in last place and struggling and had just changed managers, and it was embarrassing, to say the least. You know, if you're going to be a contender, you need to play better, and I think this. This is a big road. This is their long. The sad thing is, this is their longest trip of the season, and it's coming this late in the season. But they've got the second best road record in the National League, so, you know, maybe they do bond well. They enjoy the room service. So.
Yeah. Listen, whatever it takes. I mean, they certainly have done just fine on the road. I just kind of jump out to this, because I saw the highlight up 1,000 times, but Bryant's 495-foot home run there at Wrigley the other day.
He got all of it.
I mean, he really did. I can't think of anything I've ever seen that really can compete with that. That was just unreal.
Well, those of us that have been at Wrigley for a long time, including myself, remember Glenn Allen Hill hitting a home run that landed on the rooftop of a building across Waveland Avenue behind the left field bleachers. And that was a mighty, mighty blast. I don't think they did measurements at the time. I'm sure if I did some Google searching, I could find people that are going to guesstimate how far it was. But Sammy Sosa used to hit him down Kenmore Street, which is that little street that goes off of behind the left field bleachers. People that know Wrigley, mm-hmm. don't know what I'm talking about. But if that scoreboard wasn't there, Bryant's ball would still be rolling down Kenmore. So it was rather majestic. Now, Jim Riegelman, the former Cubs manager, current Reds third base coach, always used to say he didn't care how far they went because they all counted the same. But it still was pretty pretty impressive.
No, there's definitely something to it. I tend to agree with that. I mean, if it's 320 feet, that's enough to get it out.
Right.
But
right.
You know, Montero with the grand slam. There've been all sorts of big moments with the power lately. But I wanted to ask you about Dexter Fowler, because when we think about what's happened with this Cubs team in the second half, it seems like, you know, a lot of it really, you can never put it on one person. But boy, Dexter Fowler's done a lot to put him in this position.
Yeah. The Cubs have been missing a real bona fide leadoff man for a long time, and Fowler, they picked up Fowler, and in the first half, I know a lot of fans were saying, "Wait a minute, this isn't working." You know, we only had 232 in the first half of the season, and that since the All-Star break, he's batting 297, and he's already set career highs in home runs. He's set career highs in runs, which is what you want your leadoff man to do. And he's really been a catalyst. What I love, Madden and Fowler were talking more about it yesterday. Apparently, before every at bat, Madden will say to Fowler, "You go, we go." Sort of a, you know, a little motivational, you know, if you get on base, if you get going, you know, the rest of the team will get going. They used to do it just, you know, before a game. Now they do it before every at bat. And as silly as it sounds, Dexter says, you know, it kind of keeps him going. So just to know that. And it worked in the Labor Day game against the Cardinals. You know, he hit a leadoff homer, which was his fifth of the season. And then he added a two-run double later in the game, and he got a walk. I mean, that's what you want your leadoff man to do. And they haven't had that for a long time. Shoot, I have to go back to, like, Jerome Walton way back then, and when they picked up Kenny Lofton late in 03. But Fowler's really filled a void on this team, and it's just really helped.
With your word association, I can just say, Matt Garza, go. What is going on?
Angry.
He's
not a happy Brewer right now. Brewers bounced him from the rotation, and he did not take it very well. And there is a big-time rift right now between a pitcher who's signed for two more years at $25 million, $12.5 million each of the next two seasons, and he had a terrible season this year. The Brewers went to him earlier last week and said, you know, we think that we're going to hit the stop button, as Craig Counsell said it. They offered him the opportunity to not make his scheduled start in Cincinnati. He said he wanted to pitch. They asked him to move to the bullpen after that. He declined. So there's a chance that he's just going to basically sit on the bench for the final calendar month of the season. And, you know, he'll make just shy of $2 million for that. And then they have to figure out how to move forward with him for next season, because just by financial necessity alone, he's a big part of this team. He'll be their second highest paid player behind Ryan Braun next year. And for him to be as unhappy as he was in his comments to us, I wish I could share some of it with you, but a lot of it was just not repeatable on a family webcast. Very personal against the current general manager, Doug Melvin. And there's a lot of anger there from Matt Garza. So we'll see how they move forward from that.
Wow. You know, I get it, right? I mean, you're asking a guy to do something else, right? Let's go pitch in the bullpen, right? Well, I don't want to. Okay, I get that, but at the same time, you know, you're an employee. You're getting paid. Isn't there some level of responsibility on the player then to simply do as told? Is there? I guess I look at it like there has to be a clause. There has to be some way that a team can say, well, I'm not going to pay you to not do anything, right? I mean, you're an employee. I'm asking you to take out the garbage. Take out the garbage.
Well, okay, a couple of things. Number one, acting that way toward a player, today's player, doesn't always work very well. And, you know, again, this is a player who is important for this team for the next two seasons. And do you want to really push it and order a player to do something he doesn't want to do when you need him to some degree? The Brewers said, you know, decided at this time it wasn't worth getting into that sort of a shoving match about. So really, they asked him to pitch in the bullpen or offered him the opportunity to pitch in the bullpen. And he declined. And in asking Craig Counsell about this a little bit, you know, Counsell said, look, he cares about 2016. Matt Garza is going to be in the rotation in 2016, Counsell said. And they need him to be good. So whatever is the best way to get him productive again, that's what Counsell wants. And whether that is pitching or not pitching the rest of the way, the manager said it, he's fine either way. I don't think they really press this. I think they could if they wanted to, and then it might be a different matter, but there's no reason to. The Brewers wanted to build this as, let's use the final month to look at some younger pitchers. And it sort of gave Garza an opportunity to have a soft landing, right? He could have said, you know, it wasn't really on Garza's struggles then. It was more about the bigger picture for the franchise. Garza opted not to accept that landing pad, and he made it into something else by going public with the frustration that he was experiencing in that moment. It's not a good situation to be in, but the way Craig Counsell said it is, he's moving on. I mean, they want to look at other guys. That begins with a right-hander named Ariel Pena on Wednesday, and we'll see after that. There are some other pitchers in the minor leagues that perhaps they want to see, and it just, you know, it was a way to take this a little bit off of Matt Garza's well-documented struggles and make it about, you know, the bigger picture for the team and the future and this rebuilding process that they've launched.
And Mark, you're right to it. Jay Bruce making history. And, you know, when you talk about the history of the Cincinnati Reds organization, the fact that he's one of six players, right? With, what is it? A 1,000 hits, 200 home runs. Pretty remarkable stuff.
Especially when you think that he's only 28 years old, it's even, you know, it's pretty remarkable. I mean, those two numbers on their own aren't obviously big offensive numbers when guys have 3,000 hits and 500 home runs, but to have them both and to have a long history like the Reds have had and for them to do that, I mean, the guys on the list are Johnny Bench, Tony Perez, Frank Robinson, Ted Kluszewski, and George Foster. Three of those guys are Hall of Famers. And, yeah, it's a remarkable thing. I don't think he really put a lot of thought into it, but I think at the same time he was blown away by the fact that some of the people on that list are pretty lofty. And even noted that a couple weeks ago they had an entire weekend for Tony Perez. So, and that just kind of shows. And MJ gets a lot of shots that, you know, kind of directed his way because I don't think people are happy with some of his production, and he does take a lot of lumps on social media, but I think a lot of people are also missing the fact that he's done a lot of really good things since he came up in 08, and he's just been a producer of offense, and he's done it all at a pretty young age.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's just it. I mean, still well shy of his 30th birthday. I mean, it's awesome. Of course, it has been, you know, last year was not a great year, and this year, you know, has been, I don't know how you'd characterize this year, but the .233 average, the 307 on base. I guess the reality is, you know, he's capable of at least a little bit more.
Oh, he's definitely capable of more. And he went into a horrible slump. It's weird. He was relieved to have not been traded at the deadline. I was actually there right at 4 o'clock in the clubhouse when it came and went, and he was still there. And I literally watched him exhale. and he was relieved. And then at that time, he was hitting really well. He was in a nice streak coming out of the All-Star break, and he was really producing, and he seemed like with all the pressure of being possibly traded away from the only team he ever knew, and he was really rising to the occasion. And then since a couple days after that, maybe like August 3rd or 4th, he's just been in an absolute tailspin, and he's kind of coming out of it the last couple of days. He's been hitting pretty well on the homestand, but I would definitely think that he would like to have a few of these at-bats back and try to maybe do it over again, because he hasn't had the most consistent year. And that's been a thing with him. He's had some high peaks and some very low valleys. And very often, he's not doing the in-between. He's kind of a man of extremes.
Yeah. Well, as long as we're talking about extremes, Joey Votto's second half would qualify as an extreme.
Oh, my God, yeah. It's been remarkable, and a lot of it's really outside the big bright spotlight, of course, with the Reds being eliminated from the playoff, the division already likely to be eliminated from the wild card not too long from now. A lot of this is being done away from the spotlight. People are obviously watching Bryce Harper and Goldschmidt and what's going on in the American League with the Blue Jays and everything like that. And Votto's just really producing at a really epic pace. He's on base over 500 since the second half. He's hitting near 400, and his OPS is in the range of 1300, and that's really remarkable. And he's really back. He's going to have most likely over 30 home runs for only the second time in his career. And the last time he did that was when he was an MVP in 2010. And I would not be shocked if he gets some most valuable player votes. I don't think he's going to get the number one spot from anybody, but I think he'll be on a lot of people's top five lists, and he'll be deserving that. He's just had a really nice year. And his big regret, as he told me last week, was that he just wishes these were coming in games that had meaning down the stretch. It's a shame that he's playing his best at a time when the team is playing its worst.
Yeah, do you give his accomplishments extra credit, if you will, because of the context? You know, like, I would think it'd be more challenging to produce in a situation like this year for a guy like Votto. Why pitch to him?
I don't think you get extra credit. I think he's just a guy that is like anyone else. Even when you're down the stretch and you're as a team irrelevant to the postseason, you still have to do your job and produce and put on your uniform and play. And I think for him, the biggest thing is just that he proved once and for all that this injury that he had last year that really limited him to 62 games, and a lot of people questioning, even Marty Brenneman questioning whether he was still an elite player. And he answered that emphatically that he is, and he can be with, you know, play with the best of them. And this bodes well going into next season that perhaps he'll hit the ground running and really be productive. His, you know, in the first half, he wasn't as dynamic as he is in the second half this year. And if he can put both halves together the same, he's going to be incredible, and he will be an MVP candidate.
So there you go. Just a couple weeks left. We'll have all of it for you here. MLB.com Extras National League Central Edition.